First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We're recording this on Sunday morning, January 30th, 2022. I'm Larry Rhodes, or Doubter 5, and as usual, we have our co-host, Wombat, on the line with us. Hello, Wombat.
Good news. I've joined a new religion. It's called Super Deluxe Atheism. I'm very happy about it.
Oh, I think I'm there too. Ooh. Good.
We got good the new DLC and everything.
Yeah.
Can I have Super Duper Deluxe?
What? I'm already outdated? No. Yeah,
obsolete. And with us on the lines from across the sea, we have the John Richards over in England. Hello, hello.
Hello. We have
Dread Pirate Higgs from Canada Way. George Brown from East Tennessee. Hello, hello. And the famous duo, the action duo of Sean and Scott.
What's up? It's Big Easy.
Yep. This is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. It's a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you think you're the only non-believer in town, well, you're just not. We're a small town, well, kind of small, in Tennessee in the Bible Belt, and we have a group of over 1,000 of us. And we'll tell you more about that group after the mid-show break. But you are not alone. Also, we have just joining us with us, Eric Green. Say hello, hello. Wombat, what's our topic for today?
Today we're going to be talking, does raising your child in a religious environment mean or constitute child abuse? Is that technically child abuse to raise your kid in a religious environment? But you guys, we are one square away from a Brady Bunch situation. So let's just jump straight into the meat and potatoes. I'd say quick invocation from Dredd, and then we'll start talking about the topic. Dredd, would you mind leading us in our weekly invocation?
Noodly Lord, who art in a colander, al dente be thy noodles. Thy blood be rum, thy sauce be yum with meat as it is with vegetables. Give us this day our garlic bread, and forgive us our cussing, as we forgive those who cuss against us. And lead us not into ketoism, but deliver us some carbs. For thine are the meatballs, and the sauces, and the grog, whenever and ever.
Amen.
You got to remember he's the meatball, the sausage, and the carbs. So, like, you can make it any way you want. And the grog. He's all there. It's all possible.
Dredd, straight up
going to ask you the question first. Does raising your kid in a religious environment constitute as child abuse?
I absolutely believe it does, yes.
Whoa. Talk to me.
Well, I mean, I was raised a Roman Catholic. Was indoctrinated at a very early age. And was taught all kinds of nonsense, which took many years to get over, including all these horrible misconceptions about how the world works, how people work, and how I should relate to other people in the world. So, yeah.
I'll throw this bone out at you then. How about this? You know, you could have been an atheist that never really questioned anything and just was lucky to be in a situation where you weren't indoctrinated. Isn't the fact that you were religious and learned to work your way out of it in its own right a benefit?
No. It's like saying that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. No. Hmm. It makes you weaker, right? Reason takes practice. And if I had had the opportunity to start at an earlier age, I would be better at it now than I am. I suspect.
Reason takes practice. I love
Reason
it.
Reason takes practice. Yeah. John it's not Richards. A natural state for the human mind.
I love it. I love reason takes practice. That's a great line. Cause like, if you don't have a chance to practice it, that yeah, could be
I'll
a problem,
get a t-shirt man. With that on and they'll be for sale.
Very cool. John, what's up?
Well, as luck would have it, last night, yesterday afternoon to you, I had an interview in my Free Thought Hour show with a guy called Andrian Timeswift, who to this day, and I think he must be about 28 now, is still suffering illness as a result of being raised in Seventh-day Adventism and having had to escape from it. It's right. left him with psychosomatic condition.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a form of PTSD, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So, John, I'll throw the question out at you. Would you then, based on that interview or anything else, consider religious upbringing child abuse, intentional or otherwise?
I would, yes, because it's a deception. So you're giving your child a disadvantage at the beginning of life when you should be giving them help.
Okay, well, let me poke at this a little bit. When you're an adult, sometimes you have the tooth fairy and it's all in good fun. And sometimes you have Santa Claus and that's all in good fun. And sometimes mommy and daddy, when they love each other, there's a stork that comes and drops babies down the chimney. And that works pretty well. Like it's in the interest of just, you know, keeping harsh concepts away from a child. Like, why does a child have to think about death or like unfairness of the universe? Like, isn't this ultimately a good thing?
How many homes have a chimney now?
I don't know. In England, it might be every home. I have no idea. I don't know. Flats on that. My bad. Flats.
I think every home in England has a chimney sweep, even if they don't have a chimney.
We're getting very, very close to like stereotypes of English culture from Americans' points of view. That's going to make John Richards go on a 4-minute tirade.
And the Swedes have an appalling Cockney accent.
There it is. But yeah, I mean, what's the harm if we accept things like Santa Claus or tooth fairies or storks or other stuff? Why can't we allow that? Eric, did you want to take that? Go for it. Oh, you're on mute, my bud. There we go. Still on.
Still can't hear you.
Okay. There you are.
I should have audio checked. I came in late, guys. Apologies. No, I think it'd probably be fair to make the distinction, though, that what you're talking about, fairy, tooth fairy, Santa Claus, all of that, it's great. Great analogy for tough concepts. But we also let the cat out of the bag eventually, right? You get to middle school or whatever, and you realize, oh, okay, it was all fake. If we did the same thing with religion, maybe that might, I don't know, I might be on board with that. It might be, yeah, okay, death is tough, things like that. Let's pretend this all happened, and then, but at least let the cat out of the bag at some point and be like, okay, we were just messing with you.
So when would be a good time to let the cat out of the bag? Eric, you're on an interesting little tangent here. I like it. When would be a good time to let a kid know? Yeah, by the way, this whole Bible thing, that's just fairy tales. We don't know what's going to happen. I think that's probably the best way of going forward. What's up? When's the right time to pull that string?
I think, like Dredd said, the earlier the better. I mean, let's get them practicing reason. I found out about Santa really early, found out there was no Santa really early. And I was a fan of that because I felt like it was lying to them. It didn't feel right. So we love Santa. We love Christmas. We do all that. But yeah, I think sooner the better, really. As soon as you think they can handle it.
Okay. On the board, Eric hates Christmas. War on Christmas continues for atheists. Larry, any other comments?
Richard Dawkins is famous for saying that it trains us to be satisfied with ignorance or not knowing things. But it's also logical and scientific ignorance specifically that it trains kids to do without and not miss. And some religions are worse than others, like fundamentalist Protestantism, Islam, Seventh-day Adventists. And some people are more subject to more harm than others. Women, for example, Islamic female circumcision is a terrible practice.
Male circumcision.
Male too, as well, but it's particularly bad with female.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. In the concept for females, it literally takes the pleasure out of, you know, relationships for men.
They're trying their best to take it out. Yeah.
Sort of like, I wish I had a choice in there, but I was a baby and they just take it off. But yeah. Larry, I'm going to throw something out at you. You're next up on my list. You know, you had a wonderful, I don't know when exactly you turned into an atheist, right? I'm using the terms facetiously, by the way. So I have my Christian hat on. You can't see it. But when you turned into an atheist, it was around 9/11. So what were you like around 30? You were like 20. It was like, how old are you? About like 25?
In 9/11, I was 51 and I've been an atheist for 30 years. I turned atheist in college.
Got it. So you had a good 20 years of your formative life. You know, you didn't kill anybody, as far as we know. You didn't rob any banks. You know, your morality, you know, Christianity put you on the right track, and you turned into an atheist after the fact. Like, I don't see a problem there. You had your morality instilled to you when you were young. It worked for you. And then you became an adult. Like, I could see that working well for most kids. By the way, you're on mute. Go for it.
As I say repeatedly on these podcasts, what Christians teach is not morality, or the Bible does not teach morality. It teaches obedience. Being able to define and decide what is the ethical and moral action at a particular time is morality. Following somebody's dictates is not morality.
I had a similar, that's very true. When I was in college, the reason why I stopped being a Christian was I took a class on morality and realized all the Bible quotes I had were insufficient as using it as a system. It was sort of like knowing all the answers to a back of a math book versus knowing how to do math, right? And as soon as I got a question I never saw before, I didn't have the answer that I could pull out. I had to actually learn how to do math. And then when I went back to the Bible, I'm like, this is not morality. This is like some really terrible behavior of an all-powerful being onto his, you know, his creation. That's terrible. Mm-hmm. Sean and Scott, you want to tag team this?
I would like to say something.
Okay, yeah, go for it. Go for it, Sean.
And you know, and what's cool is like I've been an atheist since I don't remember ever believing in God.
Now, were you in the truth? Am I allowed to pull that up right now? Okay. Okay.
No. He wasn't a Jehovah's Witness. That was
no, not at all. I was, you know, initially, you know, we grew up as Southern Baptists. I remember, you know, my grandmother taking me to church, you know, relentlessly. And it was, I always considered that just torture, you know, because I didn't understand what was being said. I was too young, first of all, you know, and, you know, the benches were hard. You know, it was uncomfortable and all of these things. But what really triggered me had to do with Santa Claus, because like everybody else, you know, we were taught, OK, God is all knowing and all seeing. He knows what everybody's doing at any time. But so does Santa Claus, because he's checking his list. He's watching you and he's checking his list and checking it twice and all of these things. And I remember one Christmas morning how, you know, kids can't wait to go downstairs and open their presents and all that. Well, I wanted to catch Santa Claus, you know, so I went down early and I caught my father putting together a bike. And I went, oh, no, Dad is Santa Claus.
Oh,
so that experience to me negated everything, you know, because then it was like, OK, I'm going to really have to sit and think about this. So from that point on, it's until, for instance, God reveals himself to me, it's all gobbledygook. I do have an open mind and it's like if he does reveal himself, but it'll have to be revealed not just to me, but everybody else is going to have to see it. You know, at the same time.
And you do want to be careful. You want to be careful with that standard, because that's how prophets are made. It's like, I looked in the cereal bowl and I saw Jesus, and now I know for a fact.
Exactly.
Dredd, exactly. You had some comments on this.
What's up? I was going to say that, you know, when parents consider the things that may harm their children throughout their youth, and of course governments, you know, don't allow people to vote until they're 19. Or in the States till they're 21, and they can't drink and smoke and all these restrictions on the activities of youth. And yet, for some reason, the pass is given on the how you treat your eternal soul, presuming you have one, and that you are essentially indoctrinated or made to make a choice about your belief in eternal life and whatnot. When you're out of the gate, pretty much. That's where I think the child abuse is actually happening, in that sense that religious parents are essentially talking out of the sides of their mouth with respect to the care that they wish to impart to the children.
I get it. George, you had a comment? George? George, there you go.
Yeah. Well, this is a really interesting discussion for me to listen to. being raised an atheist, or being, let me put it this way, being raised simply without God in the house. This is quite an interesting litany that I'm hearing from all you people who are former Christians. And so here I am, an outsider in a nation that is majority Christian, you know, and I'm just taking it in and realizing how much you guys have had to struggle with, you know, growing up. I mean, I had a difficult childhood. It just wasn't difficult in this way. So sure. I'm having a hard time imagining myself in your shoes, each one of your separate pairs of shoes, because each one of you got a different slant.
I'll tell you what's up, George. The trick about empathy is you don't necessarily have to understand the problem, but at least be able to recognize that there is a problem. And when we respect that more than, you know, taking the time to understand every story, but realizing that there is an issue here. And yeah, I can basically purport most of what's being said regarding child abuse. John, you got four stories. I hear you lifting your hand.
Yeah,
I just got a round table to go through. Go for it.
I just wanted to come in on what George just said, because I'm the same as you, George. I wasn't raised in a religion. So you and I are looking at these other guys as specimens. We're sort of studying them.
Well, what's that? Who's that National Geographic guy? The one who was looking at the gophers jumping off the cliff. Anyway, yeah, the specimens. I love it. Scott, I want to hear from you. You actually have kids. You're one of the few that do hate on this show. What do you think of the aspect that raising your kid in a religious environment could be considered child abuse as a father?
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, it is kind of child abuse in the sense that you're taking away some very important skills early on. Whether it's intentional or not, I don't know. It's kind of like the same question that I posed to a Christian on my show one time. If I think that the question was, well, don't you think it's terrible that you're an atheist and you're pushing this non-belief in God? What if it's true and you're sitting here trying to drag people away from Jesus? Well, the question could be turned around. Like, if for whatever reason, I happen to have the truth that there is no Christianity is not true, for example, and it is the truth, it turns out that it is the truth, then isn't me trying to promote that idea a good thing?
Yeah.
Isn't it a good thing to kind of help people? So, and she would say, yeah, if it was true, sure. Well, the thing is, with religious people, they think that their religion is true.
Right.
So they think that they're doing the right thing by guiding their children the way they want. But in my opinion, I don't think that they're teaching the truth. I think that they're actually doing a disservice in a way, because they're not fostering critical thinking and skepticism, healthy skepticism and critical thinking, which is a skill set in life. So for me, in my opinion, I think it is a form of child abuse. And depending on how far we want to dig into it, it may be a bigger problem than it may seem on the surface level. So
there should be an objective standard to that too.
It's the most insidious trick about religion, in that it fosters generations of people who don't have good critical thinking skills, who then pass those inferior skills down. John, what's up? I see your prompt. You're on mute, my buddy. You're on mute, you're on mute. Okay, he's just having fun.
Okay. No, I just want, this came through the door yesterday.
Oh, that came through the door.
The Watchtower.
Yeah. Watchtower, popular manuscript.
I know that one.
They have apps, though. So watch out for the app store.
I just wanted to know, Eric, should I raise my kids in this regime?
You might. No, Scott, I actually got a question for you. Let's poke this position a little bit. You know, parents give their kids ice cream, knowing that their kid deserved the treat, then there's nutrients, there's milk, you know, I'm sure there's some vitamins that are useful in ice cream. What if we find out 5 years from now, there's some terrible triacylglycerides, there's terrible hormones, there's non-GMO products in ice cream. It's the worst thing you can give a kid. What are we going to call that, child abuse too? Like, if you're calling your religious upbringing child abuse, what isn't everything child abuse? If we can find out later on that it wasn't wrong, like, where are you going to draw the line?
Draw the line. That's a great question.
I am a nutritionist, and I do think it's abuse.
Let's go to Andrew. Scott, I want to know about you. What do you think? I can tell who's a big brother already.
I mean, it's so weird because we have to define abuse. What is abuse? Is abuse a thing that's intentional? Is it abuse when I'm trying to help someone and inadvertently hurt the person because of something that I was ignorant of? Is that abuse? Is that how we're defining abuse? If so, then yeah, that would be abuse. But I don't know if that's the common definition of the word. So it's just a weird question. I think that once you know something is true, or even if you have a little bit of evidence to maybe raise the question, I think that the wise thing to do is to lean on, err on the side of caution, especially for your kids. You know, and if you're not doing that, that may be a form of abuse, I would think.
Scott, I'll get 2 points out, and then we go to Dredd for a comment, and then we'll follow up with Eric to finish out this roundtable. But one, I would say it is abuse, even if you don't know. That's just called unintentional abuse, right? And maybe it's not as bad as intentional abuse, but it could definitely cause as much or even more harm. And then the second thing is, instead of teaching kids the truth based on nuggets of information that we have, give them the mechanics to determine what true things are and what false things are. Because at least then they have the ability and wherewithal and practice skepticism to figure that out for themselves. And what we should really be focusing on is teaching systems of learning rather than learn facts, because those can be valuable or update themselves to not be as true in the future. Dredd, what's up? My opinion, so, and I don't have kids.
I think the difference lies in, the parents' responsibility, essentially, to teach their children how to think and not what to think.
That is
the vital difference, I believe.
Yeah. I think that's the trick. And if you teach your kid how to think in like the best, the great thing about that is we have great ways of how to learn things. And in fact, we know what the best one is already by demonstrable by the fact of its accomplishments. And if you were to teach that method, which is the scientific method, it's an amazing thing to have kids learn. And fortunately, it does take some time to get good at. But the sooner you start, the better you'll be even before you can even get to like a grade school situation. I remember talking to kids when I was in grade school, who were like, I'm not religious. I don't believe that. Don't you understand X, Y, Z? And I'm like, in my Christian head, I was like, oh, I'm just got to stop talking to this kid because they're making me feel uncomfortable. Like I've had conversations with kids who knew what was up even when I was in, first grade. So like, it doesn't take a lot of effort to instill good thinking protocols in kids, but it's all about like teaching good epistemologies and then make them realize that they can question that method and try to supplant it or even improve it on their own. It's totally open for everyone to constantly improve. Yeah. Boudreaux, I'm going to throw something out at you, Eric. You got beautiful kids. Listen, sometimes, when you're teaching Vivian how to play the violin or guitar, maybe you got a bunch of guitars. Maybe she gets some calluses, maybe she gets some finger strain. Maybe she'd rather watch cartoons, right? And you say, no, you got to practice. And she's like, I don't want to practice. She's like, is this good for you? Sometimes when you are in a system of doing something, it's going to, going to have some edges to it. Can't you just see the greater good of learning an instrument in the same way? Can't you see the greater good of religion? And like, don't its goods outweigh all these, much smaller issues that we're pointing up? Like the greater good of religion is like, hey, you're growing up in a religious society, you get maybe not your morals, as Larry would mention, but you do understand certain things that you should do and shouldn't do, right? You understand justice. You understand authority. Sometimes you need to listen to things. Maybe it is good to be disciplined and obedient in a sense. You know who to listen to, who your authority figures are. You have culture. You have society. Are these all great things?
I mean, you can just hear the devil's advocate sarcasm in your voice. Everything you just said, you don't agree with. But no, I mean, that's not fair, I think, because when you really think about it, not just the lack of morality in the book, but also the fact that, I mean, what religion, and how deep are you going and what pages are you reading? Which parts are you ignoring? I mean, there's so much in it that it hasn't grown with us as a society. I mean, the way we talk about homosexuality in the Bible, So it's I don't think it's fair. I mean, if you let me get in there with a red pen and clean it up, which I think some famous comedian or someone did, they actually went through the Bible and scratched out all the bad bits and there wasn't much left, but and even then it's not growing. It's not changing with the time. And I love the point too about age. You know, we don't let children vote at a young age for good reason. We don't let them decide whether or not to put on a seatbelt or ride in a booster seat. So, I mean, maybe just hold off on religion until you're 18. Then you give it a crack. But not just the one of your parents.
Now, that is interesting. So, like, you're not only saying it is abuse, unintentional in a lot of cases, but that really, if there was ever going to be a law or, like, any sort of, like, protocol, it should be let them learn religion at 18.
Yep.
And at that point, you know, if they hook on it, good for them.
No baptisms, no circumcisions, none of that stuff until you're old enough to make the choice for yourself.
Hey, you know, there might be some validity to this. I might like it a lot. Larry, some final thoughts before we get close to the half hour.
Yeah, I was just going to say, in the formative years, we could teach them things that we have evidence that actually work, like the scientific method, the rules of logic, rational thought, all those things. And then by the time they get to 18, you can go ahead and teach them about what you think about religion. I think that religion would disappear within a generation if that happened.
Yeah, but, yeah. You hear that or a lot more Star Trek fans, right?
Yeah, for sure. It reminds me of that cartoon about Star Trek, and the little boy says to his father, he says, how come there's no people don't go to church in Star Trek? And the father says, because it's the future, son. we're at the bottom of the hour. I think we need to take a break real quick. This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, and we're on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We'll be right back after this short break.
There's a certain church around, you know it well. They say a lot of people are going to hell. If you show tolerance, in hell you are put. You got a one-way ticket that Westboro will foot. Hell is full of firemen, soldiers, and teachers, philanthropists and activists and innocent preachers, celebrities and deities that ask circumcision. Because of this, I've come to an important decision. Hell, hell, I wanna go to hell. It seems a really fun place to play. But I gotta do what's right and do it every day if I wanna go to hell someday. Oh, hell, I wanna go to hell, so I gotta do what mom and dad say. I gotta love my neighbor even if they are gay, so I can go to hell someday. Ellen's really nice, but she enjoys other ladies. Jackman doesn't mind, and so he's going to Hades. Woody Allen, obviously, cause he's a Jew. Also Princess Di, Mother Teresa, too. Washington and Jefferson, and don't forget Lincoln. I can tell you now that their souls are a-sinking. Johnny Depp because he wears too much eyeliner. Andrew's Witherspoon, an overweight Rob Reiner. Hell, hell, I wanna go to hell. It seems a really fun place to play. But I gotta do what's right and do it every day if I wanna go to hell someday. Oh, hell, I wanna go to hell, so I gotta do what mom and dad say. I gotta love my neighbor even if they are gay. Maria Goretti cause she didn't give in. Spider-Man is hellbound because he is fiction. Marlon Brando's also there because of his diction. Former Bush Administrator Rice Kamakandi. Tom Hanks, Will Smith, and don't forget Gandhi. Hell is for environmentalist Al Gore. Even Christ is bound for hell cause he defended a whore. Hell, hell, I wanna go to hell. It seems a really fun place to play. But I gotta do what's right and do it every day if I wanna go to hell someday. Oh, hell, I wanna go to hell, so I gotta do what mom and dad say. I gotta love my neighbor even if they are gay, so I can go to hell someday. So I can go to hell someday. So I can go to hell, don't you wanna go to hell? So I can go to hell someday.
Welcome back to the second half of the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5, and we're on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Let's just take a second to talk about the Atheist Society of Knoxville. ASK was founded in 2002. We're in our 20th year now. ASK has over 1,000 members, and we have weekly in-person meetings at the Knoxville Old City Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria down there. Look for us inside at the high top table, usually the loudest and happiest group. We also have a virtual Zoom meeting that happens at the same time for people who don't live in Knoxville or happen to not want to get out during this COVID incidents. If you'd like to join our Zoom meeting, email us at askanatheist@knoxvilleatheist.org or letschatse@gmail.com. You'll also find the atheist group, ASK, online at Facebook, meetup.com, or knoxvilleatheist.org. Just Google Knoxville Atheist. It's just that simple. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and do a search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one. Start one. Wombat, where do you want to pick up?
So we're talking about, is religion considered child abuse? We, I think, unanimously agree that it is, though that raises some interesting topics. But before we get into it, John Richards, I know you love truthful propaganda, and you love it so much that you're almost a magnet for it. And he was holding up a Watchtower newsletter in the first half of the show. Would you mind telling us some interesting things that you found out about it?
Well, I read it very carefully from cover to cover. And it offers afterlife. It offers eternal life in heaven.
Now, yeah, you got to move. It's a change of address.
Yes, it is.
Sounds like a nice place to be.
The reason this is interesting to me is I'm president of Atheism UK. And on our council, we have a lawyer. Now, in 2012, the Advertising Standards Authority in this country took action, the best way of describing it, against the Healing on the Streets movement, who at the time were giving out leaflets purporting to be able to solve any condition, to cure any illness, just if people came along and prayed with them. And the Advertising Standards Authority said, you can't do that because it's raising false hope. So this document is also raising false hope. Expectation of eternal life. I'm going to get our lawyer to put the ASA on their backs.
Nice. Dredd, comments on this idea?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know if you guys remember the Red Bull lawsuit where their advertisement says Red Bull gives you wings.
Yeah.
And they were successfully sued in a class action suit for,
because they literally wouldn't give you wings.
That's what the advertising says, and so anyway, there was a class action.
Is there no
suit
room for metaphor anymore?
Which one? They were successful, and the people in the class action suit ended up, you know, getting some kind of small award.
Yeah, you know what they
do
now?
Probably free Red Bull for a year or something like that.
Now they just put two eyes and wings, and now I know why they had
it. Right, exactly.
It's the silliest thing to sue for, man. I can't believe it. Eric.
But what I'm saying is that if that's successful, you know, maybe John's got a better shot.
Dredd, well, I have a comment for you, Dredd, because sure. I have in my possession a postcard that details the greatness of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Ah, yes.
It was given to me by you. And if you are on board with this idea of, I'm not saying litigation, but at least the spirit of it, wouldn't Pasifarianism be just as guilty of touting a supernatural being that can just do as many superficial claims?
No.
How? In what way? How? In what way?
That's it. Because I have a double standard.
Well played.
That's true.
and really,
I love it. That's a quote for the day, man.
And really, who doesn't love pasta?
Because so I have
pasta really exists too.
I'm wondering whether the JWs will pull a Red Bull, you know, and you know, try and bribe me like Red Bull did, by offering me eternal life.
Right. That's interesting. All right, I'm going to throw this out. Eric, you know, if you are on board with this, what's your opinion on this? Do you feel like churches should be able to do that, be able to, you know, issue propaganda in support of their beliefs?
Well, first of all, they should just put another E in eternal and problem solved.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
It's tough because I think in thinking about the fine spaghetti monster, I would think most Pastafarians would happily take a lawsuit. And I'm sure you can respond to this, happily take a lawsuit if you know, it was fair on all religions. I mean, if you could sue Pastafarians for what they're saying in your Bible, then I would think that just opens the door to do the same thing to all religions. And I would die on that sword.
Interesting. Yeah, that'd be a great hill to die on. Yep. I was just going to say that Pastafarianism alone amongst religions is the only one that offers a God-back guarantee. And it says, join us for 90 days. If you don't like what you see.
Hey, not on this show. Not on this show. You better watch out. He's doing the thing that we could get sued for. I'm not going to get sued for this.
No call to actions.
No way endorse the claims of a flying spaghetti monster. Scott, what's up? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just going to say that it would be excellent if you had to require the Watchtower Society to have fine print that, you know, that these promises.
A disclaimer.
Disclaimer. But that would really go against the value that people would find in the claims of the church.
Sure.
It would really be an interesting turnabout of events if that were to happen.
Sean, I got a question for you. Don't churches also have a right to free speech? And can't I issue out publications if I'm a church in the good spirit of free speech and being able to do so? Whether you believe it or not is up to you, but I should be able to communicate freely.
Yeah, I believe so.
Longer answer? No, short answer? Okay, totally works for me. Hey, Larry, what do you think? Churches, should they have free speech? Like, is this, aren't you saying you can sue me if I say my God is awesome? Isn't that like some sort of...
Well, churches do have free speech, obviously. I mean, they may be trying to draw a line under it in Britain, but in America, for sure, they're, you know, say whatever they want to. I think that generally worldwide, globally, we need to come up with some kind of standard for true speech. We have not done that. We need it very badly, because especially after this last presidency, if the president of the United States can say falsehood after falsehood after falsehood for 4 years straight, what kind of example is that for the rest of us?
To the detriment of hundreds of thousands of lives.
Right. Exactly.
Dread.
So you guys may or may not be aware of the fact that the Center for Skeptical Inquiry is engaged currently in a lawsuit with Walmart and CVS over false advertising claims made by their homeopathic products. So these claims are being put to the test, and so I don't see why religion would be exempt from the same level of scrutiny.
Let's that homeopathy is. I absolutely want to talk about that in its own topic next week, because we're going to delve into the religion of nutrition. And I absolutely want you to bring that up again. And I think that's a fascinating point of homeopathy.
I've got one more t-shirt comment.
Yeah, go for it.
Faith is the homeopathy of reason.
Okay. Yeah. George Brown, I'm going to throw a question out at you. I'm trying to see how I can phrase it. But, you know, you were raised an atheist. You never had this religious upbringing or background. Would you be upset if, you know, you were driving down the street in New York, Brooklyn one day, and you just saw large billboards promoting God or a certain kind of God? Would that in any way change your day? Or would you be like, oh, maybe I might check that out? I'm seeing that advertisement enough times.
Well, my gut sense is that I would be offended.
Really?
Yeah, but in the same way that I'm offended here when I see doctors advertising on billboards, I'm not used to that. I mean, here I am in the Bible Belt. Doctors are advertising on billboards. Lawyers are advertising. Hospitals are advertising. You know, this is, I haven't lived in the Bible Belt before. And this is a different consciousness. So what I was going to say when I raised my hand was about freedom of speech, is that I'm all for it. But there also have to be consequences for lying.
Ooh, okay.
You know?
How, all right. And this is dangerous territory that we're in right now. But how do you prove that a supernatural being isn't capable of the claims of one of his ardents, right? Like, what kind of test can you apply to even confirm that's a lie? And we got to prove you're not lying? Or should the guideline be...
Wait. I need to take it off that particular pedestal. Okay. Because I said there have to be consequences for lying, in the sense that the way the American legal system is set up is you don't have standing to sue somebody unless you have been harmed. And I like that, you know. So in other words, if somebody told a lie.
Oh, did we lose your audio? We may have.
Sounds
Dredd, like. Would you mind going on with the spirit? I saw you were raising your hand to be able to speak to something.
Yeah. Sorry, I forgot.
Okay, so here's my thing. I understand what George Brown is saying. It's basically that we should hold people accountable for what they're saying, including even large organizations, which I'm for. But should our standard be we should step in only after we can prove that they're lying? Or should our standard be you got to meet the criteria of telling the truth first before you even start to espouse your claims?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, one puts the burden of evidence on me, the other one puts the burden of evidence on them. What's up, Jerry?
And I would think that someone making a positive claim has the burden of truth or burden of proof, right?
Yes. And it's not my job to prove that they're lying or not. It's for them to claim to prove that it's true.
Right.
In just my like head, in that's law. Like the, that is the fundamental problem with a lot of religions is that they will say things and then leave it up to the non-believers to make them make the case that they're in fact wrong. And then meanwhile, they profit. And that classic shifting of the burden of proof is what's made them so integral in society today and hard to remove by people who don't have good reasoning. What's up, John?
Well, we already have that standard for products and services. You can't put any lies on your labels. You can't make any false claims if you're offering a service. You will be prosecuted.
Right. Okay. Joe, Larry, what's up?
Well, what's funny is, you know, they always say they try to transfer the burden of proof to us saying, how do you know that God doesn't exist? You have all the infinite knowledge of the universe. You see behind every rock and every cloud and every nebula to know that there's no God out there. But then they turn around and say that the God of that religion isn't real.
Right.
Or the God of that religion isn't real.
Right.
You know, they're doing exactly the same thing. Pastafarianism, why we've had such a hard time.
Right. But they won't shoulder any burden of proof either way.
But your problem, particularly with the Pastafarian perspective, is that the system is rigged to favor very specific religions. And so even when they're all making equal claims, Christians saying, oh, well, Pastafarianism isn't real. And Pastafarians are like, well, our God's the real God. Society or the institutionalized network of how our departments of government and authority figures and education all work support one claim. And I just find that to be, you know, hypocritical to the point where it makes me like unnecessarily upset. And that causes harm in my own aspect. Scott, I saw you raising your hand. What's up?
Yeah, I would say, like, for me, I would think that science should be a good standard for evidence and truth. But see, this is the problem that we're going to run into with religious folk is they're going to say that, well, you're appealing to scientism, which is a philosophical statement. You're going to say that science is the authority for supernatural stuff. Like they can make the claim that, well, religion can't be proven scientifically. It's not a scientific question. So how can you use science as a standard to judge my religion? And then so you've got to come up with another way to, claim that these are false claims or whatever the case is, you know.
So who are the scientists here? We got John, Eric, me. I'm going to say, and you're an entomologist, aren't you, Dred?
Yeah.
Or you know some stuff about it. Like, I'm sure we all have some aspects of this.
I'm pretty invested in science, yes.
I think you won't have issues if I say this. But yes, currently science doesn't have a way to test the supernatural. But once we do, once something can be proposed as a model to test for supernatural things, that becomes science. Like that will be entirely included as a new test within the realm of science to test the supernatural. So it's not that it's never going to be a scientific method. What we're asking for is, please show us the methods so we can verify if it's actually feasible or not. And what we get is word games and not like a God detector machine. Give us a God detector machine. too many fans. John, what's up?
And all the while, the claims of supernatural are untestable.
Yes.
They are unscientific claims.
They're unfalsifiable. It's also one of the problems.
Well, not repeatable. Like,
give us a situation where regardless, it's always going to point to that. What is up, Dred?
Well, I was just going to say, people may recall Stephen Jay Gould talking about religion and science as being non-overlapping magisteria, when in fact, claims of any kind of supernatural being or things are supposed to have real-world effects. And that's where those claims do have a burden of proof on those making them, because the real-world effects are what are the testable aspects of it, right?
Right. Boudreau, Eric, I'm going to throw this out at you. Same question, scientists in the room. Do you think that there could be potential if a model is presented that says, this actually will test if there's a God or not. It's a scientific method. Can give binary yes or no's. Would that be adopted by science? Would science, from your perspective, be open to that as a machine or a testing algorithm?
Yeah. No, I think if we could come up with a way to test our claims, if that's what you mean. Yeah.
Supernatural ones.
Yeah. And I think one maybe science fiction-y sounding machine could be a time machine.
Ooh.
I mean, what if we went back 2,000 years and speak?
All right. I've had this discussion with Eric before, because we're talking about a time machine that lets you peer into the past and see it without actually interacting with anything. It just pulls all the photons back together mathematically and then reconstructs any image you want. And you could see if Jesus died on the cross. So you can see if he made food multiply. You can see if Muhammad did what Muhammad did. You could see if Jade did what Jade did. Zeus did what Zeus claimed to have done. It solved things, like, right? Yeah. Like, I totally get you. If we had that, that'd be fantastic. John, what do you have?
Well, the very idea that something supernatural can have an effect in the natural realm is nonsense. It's a complete inconsistency, because the supernatural is immaterial, and an immaterial entity cannot have any effect on the material. Imagine a ghostly hand trying to push a domino, it's going to go straight through, isn't it, and have no effect.
Yeah.
George, did you have something to say?
Well, I unfortunately, let me give you a little backtrack here. I lost my sound.
I know. Well, did you have a...
When I stopped speaking, and I've discovered that every single Zoom meeting has its own technology, and one that I suffer from on this meeting almost every week is that my incoming sound just vanishes and I have to reboot my whole system to get back in. So I have missed everything in between.
Don't worry, we'll catch you up. It's God.
But what I think you've been talking about, makes sense to me, and I don't quite know how to implement it, but I like it.
George is actually on a good point. So we've been talking a lot of smack right now, you know, child abuse, God, or religion is child abuse, that, you know, we don't have a scientific measure of God, so why believe it in the first place? How do you rectify it? What do we do to litigate it? Are you going to punish the parents that are involved in this? I'll throw this out to Eric first. I'd like to see, should there be some sort of punishment criteria based on intentional to completely intentional misinformation of children on a religious ground? Or is that something that should always be up to the parent to be able to determine on their own?
We have a lot of laws keeping parents from doing horrible things to kids. But it does seem that religion kind of gives a get out of jail free card for some things. And maybe next week we can get into some of the, you know, religious exemptions to medicine and things like that. But
sure. Yeah.
It's scary. I don't think the world's ready for that yet. Again, because it seems like it would look like we're trying to, you know, attack religion. But I don't know. I feel like the having a grace period before you start indoctrinating would be something that it just would be.
So you're saying that if I'm an adult and I bring my child to church, there should be some sort of action by a government, or is that a fine, or is it just a public shunning? Like, what's the situation?
Maybe it starts more as a
recommendation.
Taboo. Oh, what that, Larry?
A recommendation.
Yeah, kind of make it seem icky. Like, you know, like taking your kid to a strip club, that would be weird, right?
So we got some comments. All right. That's a great comment. We're going to leave on the great comment. Dred, what's next? Yeah. Scott.
It's interesting that there's so much cognitive dissonance among people of various religions with respect to the practices of other religions that aren't theirs. For instance, there's all kinds of Christians who would throw their arms up in the air if they heard on the news that a child was denied a blood transfusion because the parents of that particular faith denied that life-saving intervention. So, you know, it depends on where you're standing from your religious pulpit as to whether or not you agree or disagree, but you never turn that gaze inward to examine the failure of your own epistemology.
Sure. Yep. I hear that. John.
Well, there's a template for this, isn't there? Because the movies have a rating system, don't they? So I suggest we just make churches X rated.
Nice. Or perfect. No, I like this idea. I kind of like this idea. If we made churches PG-13 or the Bible PG-13, you know, or all religious texts PG-13. As a recommendation, that is parental guidance, right? That means you can't sell a Bible to some kid. I don't know how many kids are in line to get Bibles in the first place, though. But at least the recommendation is there. And if you're an adult and you want to buy your kid a thing, go for it. But if you just walk down the street and you see a 9-year-old going through the Book of John, you're like, hey, where's your parents?
Need to get everybody,
a Spider-Man comic book, kid.
Need everybody to get on board about making memes that religion should be PG-13. We'll spread it.
yeah. Okay, Scott, you had the comment next. What's up?
And then I was just going to say what Dread Pirate just said about the blood transfusion. I'm familiar with that. And the organ transplant with Jehovah's Witnesses and all of this kind of stuff. It's like right now, in the United States, that's a protected right for the parent to deny medical treatment for their children. Mm. That's obviously abuse, in my opinion. Mm. But it's protected. That kind of abuse is protected in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like we've already set a precedence, and it's going to be a really hard uphill battle to overturn that, including any other sort of, and these are, we're talking about claims, words, stuff like that.
Yeah.
These are actually things that endanger the very life of a child, and they're already protecting that. So,
well, consider the challenge to Roe versus Wade. I mean, with a conservative bench, you guys are probably in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
George, you got a comment? Hey, classic mic technique. You've been in radio, you know this. There you go. Take yourself on mute.
On mute.
Still on mute. Okay. So I'm translating for him. You have to buy more coffee. It's really good for you. It's really good for you. Forget about it. All right.
Hold down spacebar, George. Just hit spacebar.
While George is working on his audio issues, how about this? We're near the end of the show. We'll do last words on the subject. I like the PG-13 idea. That's like some of my final ideas. And I do think there should be some consideration before you involve your child in a religious environment, because I know you want the best for your kid, But is that something that your parents just did for you, and that's the reason why you're doing it? It tends to be the case that, you know, we give the kids the same childhood we have. But is that the best system to improve things? It's being an adult's hard. What can I tell you? Dredd, final words on this?
Well, I did want to mention my disappointment in some of my fellow Canadians in this convoy effort to, you know, for anti-vaxxers and anti-maskers and anti-mandators. Is disappointed to see so many people exercise the freedom to have a convoy across Canada to speak their mind while claiming they don't have freedom. It's bizarre and disappointing.
Certainly,
John,
is.
Final words?
Yeah, well, I'd like to ask all you guys who were raised in a religion, that's not you, George, but everybody else, would you, if you have children or if you plan to have children, would you raise them the way you were raised?
Or what improvements can you make, right? I know that's a huge shot to an ego, but like, what improvements could you make to your childhood that you can, you know, pass forward? And that takes some honest thought and reflection, I think. And religion may not always be the best answer for that. Larry, before we get to your final words, Sean, thank you for joining the show today. Final words on our topic?
Yeah, I found it very interesting. And going back to the question, would I raise my children? I do have two grown children. And what I did is I tried to explain the best I could that this is because their grandparents on my wife's side at the time were very religious. And I said, and I know that I have no idea. I left them with them. So I know that this is being talked about. And I just tried to explain to them when they were old enough to kind of understand that, okay, I don't believe this stuff and this is why. Okay, they're going to tell you that it's true, but I want you to try to keep an open mind, you know, and, you know, figure it out for yourself.
Right.
You know,
right.
But, and that's the best I could do. You
know? Is it so much about, you don't have to worry about trading your facts to your kids, but can you teach them to figure things out? Can you teach them a method of understanding true things and false things? Because that's way more useful. Because the world's always going to be changing. The answers that we have today can always be improved on, only if we have good wherewithal to figure out how to get those answers. Yeah. Guys, we may have to wrap up about here. Eric, did you get a chance to say your final words?
I didn't, but I'm glad Sean did because he's a newcomer and I'm good. Great cool, show, cool, everyone.
Cool. Yeah, great show, everyone. Mm-hmm. Sorry, we were animated cast, big cast today. So happy everybody showed up today. Larry, I don't know what atheism is.
What's true, all about? Anyway, thanks for plugging my book. It's available on Amazon. It's called Atheism, What's It All About? And what I had to say on the topic was, how do you raise your kids if we're atheists? Do we teach them what we know? What I would do is just teach them that it's okay and necessary to question what you've been told. I want them to question what I tell them as well as what anybody else tells them, you know, and let it go with that and trust to their intelligence and education to carry them the rest of the way. If you like this show, be sure to go to thedigitalfreethought.com and click on the blog button. We have our radio show archives there, atheist songs, and many articles on the subject. If you have questions for the show, you can send them to askanatheist@knoxvilleatheist.org or letschatse@gmail.com, and we'll answer them on future shows. If you're having trouble emotionally, rationally, whatever, leaving religious beliefs behind, you can find help at recoveringfromreligion.org. Thank you for joining us on the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. Remember, you can find this show on Apple iTunes, Rocket Cast, Amazon, and podcasts everywhere. Just search for Digital Free Thought. And if you're watching this on YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe. Remember, everybody is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life, and we'll see you next week. Say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.